Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Mountain Man Dan Show. All right, everybody, it's been a while since we've been here, gotten together and did an episode with work and everything, and then all that, but it's been even longer since we've been together with Nick. Nick, how's it going?
Oh, just pure hell, you know, but hey, I'm here.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'd have to go online and look at my app over here on my phone and see when the last time I recorded an episode was, but it's been a while since I've done one myself. And I know it's been quite a while since you've been on because of work and everything else, just getting in everybody's way.
Yeah.
The last episode I did was April 11th, so just about a month ago. And the last one you and I did together was February 2nd. So it's been a while.
Ooh, a little while, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, I got on. So the one I did. The last episode I tried putting out, I was up here at work, and I've been recording for the last little while with my wife's computer ever since we were having issues with that app we were using when we first started out and audio. And
right.
When we did the 1911 episode and the audio on it was just such crap, it just kind of ruined the experience for me. So I went ahead and
it was like an early Paul Harrell video.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Got construction going on in the background and shit.
Yeah, it was really bad. So I started recording everything on the computer instead, and it was working out pretty good for a while. But when I come up here to work, I don't have a computer because we only had the wife's computer. And I tried doing an episode, last episode I did, I just did it with the phone the way we used to, and it just sounded terrible, you know. So I went ahead and spent a fair amount of money and bought a computer for myself that I can bring up here to work and set up with the headset. I can now set up kind of a mobile recording studio here at work. Yeah. So that was a hefty little chunk of money, but now that we have the computer, I can start, you know, setting things up a little better to make the audio better. As time goes by, I think we'll be able to do some good stuff with it. So
yeah, maybe I'll get lucky and get fired in the morning and have more time. So,
yeah, it's been busy. I ended up on the last episode I got together and did. I talked about a bear hunt I had planned because I was supposed to go to Yakutat on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of this month to go bear hunting and fishing while I was down there. And with work, they were going to give me exactly 3 days off. So I would have gotten off. I'd have to drive 12 hours home from work, you know, spend an entire day driving. I'd get home at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night. And then I was supposed to fly out and head bear hunting the next morning at, I think it was 9:30 in the morning. It's like, I'm going to get home at 9, get all my stuff packed. I'm not going to have time to do anything, barely get any sleep, fly down there, hunt for a day and a half, get back on airplane, get home at 9 o'clock at night, just to get up the next morning at 4 in the morning, get ready to drive 12 hours back to work. And I said, no, screw it. It's not going to be fun. So I canceled the bear trip. The company got wind of me canceling the bear trip. And I haven't even been home. I didn't even get any time off. I've been up here on the slope now for going on 5 weeks.
Mm.
So, but it's all good. So what have you been up to?
Oh, a lot of work. A lot of work, and I think it's coming to a close. I think me and my employer are about to have some irreconcilable differences. And I got something else kind of going on to where I'm probably going to end up just going into business for myself within the next few months. So, yeah, which would be good because I want more time to do stuff like this.
Yeah, so long term with this job, I'm supposed to. Like right now I'm working on a project, a big paint reclaim project. So they need me for the hours. So I've been requested to put in a lot of extra time, but normally with this job I'm on right now, I should work a 4 weeks on, 2 weeks off, which would give me a lot more time to go out and do, you know, go hunting and that and fishing and kind of doing the stuff that I enjoy doing.
That'd be good.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But so anyway, yeah, I, ended up canceling my bear hunting trip, but I did keep the airplane ticket so I can go down there later on in the year sometime, you know, maybe, oh, I might go down end of August or something when the bears are nice and fat off all the salmon and go see if I can whack one. I really want to shoot a bear with that 375 Ruger now.
Yeah, I kind of want to shoot a bear with my BFR. I don't know why.
You know, I've got two rifles I really want to whack a bear with. I've got that 375 Ruger. I really want to whack a bear with it. But I really want to whack a bear with that 45-70 that I inherited from my dad, too. And I kind of want my first bear to be with that rifle.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind using my Contender either. That would be kind of.
Have you even gotten a chance to shoot that Contender yet?
I haven't shot it or the BFR.
Well,
it's impossible to even shoot in Nashville right now.
I haven't been in Nashville in, I think the last time I was in Nashville was around 2014. So it's been a while.
You ain't missing nothing.
No, I don't. I didn't know. I don't even think I stopped for gas when I drove through there last time. I was just like, bye.
Yeah.
So, have you been able to find any 35 Remington ammo yet?
No.
Yeah. And you're not reloading yet. I still haven't disowned you for some reason, but I'm with COVID and everything, I'm going to give you a little bit of a pass on that.
I've been real busy too. I haven't had time for much of nothing. Yeah. You know, two of my best friends are getting married, so I've been running around doing wedding stuff and building engines and a lot of side work and try and get my stuff off the ground. So hopefully I can leave my job or do something else. I'm kind of tired of having a boss, to be honest.
Yeah, I hear you. I feel that way about 3 o'clock every day. And then about 4 o'clock, I get to go home and eat. I'm like, okay, I'll go try it again tomorrow.
Yeah. So, I get a problem when all they do is yell at you and bitch about everything. So
yeah, it gets old, man. I mean, that's one of the reasons I came over to pipelining this year. I mean, it's more time away from home, but it is so much more laid back than paving like I normally do in the summer. I mean, everything, and there's a lot of political stuff to the pipelining because there's, you know, you've got to fill out 200 safety forms every day and you got to do this and you got to do that. And there's the procedures, but it's just for my trade, especially being an operator, is so much more laid back. Just, you know, everything's just, you know, no rush. Get it done when it gets done, you know?
Right.
So I can deal with the extra paperwork and stuff if it means I don't have to get yelled at all day every day.
Yeah, I heard that.
But so yeah,
that's pretty good too.
You know what? It kind of averages out because it's less pay than what I would make paving per hour. But I'm not putting 2 to 3 tanks of gas in my truck a week, which that gas prices right now, and that's a substantial amount of money to fill a 1-ton truck with gas, you know, twice a week. And I'm not feeding myself. And I don't know about you, but I'm 6'10" and 340 pounds. I eat a lot of food. So that's a pretty substantial cost savings too. So it averages out, you know, the things that I'm not spending money up on while I'm up here kind of make up for the less pay, but it's still really good pay for what I do.
Yeah, right.
All right, Nick, well, what do we want to talk about first? I think I've got a couple of new things. You've got a couple of new things. You know what I did pick up here recently, and it's in one of my bags right here behind me somewhere, is I finally bought one of Rob's belts.
You like it, don't you?
From Simply Rugged. Man.
Yeah.
So I got the laminated one. I got the 2-layer, the thick one.
Yeah.
And all I'm going to say about that belt is I am really glad my dad didn't have one of those belts when I was growing up.
Yeah, he'd have beat the hell out of you with it.
That would have been like getting beat with a 2x4. That is a thick, heavy damn belt.
I wear one every day.
I probably will once I get that one broke in. Up here, sitting in a loader all day trying to get that thing broke in, the top of the belt was kind of rubbing into my muffin top a little bit. So I ended up taking it off for a couple days up here. Once I can, where I'm not sitting in one spot all day and can move around, it'll probably be a little better. But it'll be a good gun belt.
For some reason, it's odd. Rob's leather does something weird to me. It actually will make me itch. I think that there's something used when they tan it or something that I'm allergic to.
Yeah, I don't have that issue, but right where – so I did two things like right at the same time. I bought new FR pants because that new job I have now required me to wear fire resistant clothing. And I don't know if you've ever messed with FR jeans, but they're like starch diff. Really? So between the top of the jeans rubbing on the bottom of my belly and that belt, it was just, this combination was a little too much. So I decided to take the belt off for now and just deal with the jeans until they get broken.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
So, I mean, you know, you're bouncing around in the loader all day and the bottom of your belly's bouncing up and down on that, right on that stupid top of your pants and the belt. But that is a nice, that's a heavy duty belt. You know, it's, I've got a steel line Deltax Force right now that I've been wearing for about 5 years. And that's simply rugged. I didn't really have a whole lot of faith in just a double laminated because I've been wearing a steel line belt for so long. And I got to say that belt compared to this belt, it makes this, the Deltax Force look like a wet noodle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the stuff, yeah, I mean, I wear one every day and I wear a simply rugged shootist and mag pouch and
hang
all sorts of stuff off that belt.
I had him make me a shoulder rig too for my 1911. And I haven't gotten to see it in person yet. Now it showed up at the house and I've been up here for a while and my wife sent me a care package up here to work and she threw that belt in there for me too. So I have the belt up here, but I can't have a holster or a gun where I'm working at right now. So I haven't gotten a chance to see that shoulder rig, but I'm pretty excited about it.
So. It's kind of weird they don't let you carry guns up in Alaska when you're working.
It's pipeline, so it's federal regulations, unfortunately. Mm. And then there's always the possibility that we have to fly in and out of job sites on commercial airlines. There isn't really any good way to, there isn't really a way to sneak one up here. Not that I would anyway, but it's pretty much impossible to try sneaking one in.
I see.
Yeah. So it is what it is. I'm not super happy about it, you know, working up and down the line. One of the guys had to pilot out and check something earlier in a helicopter and they saw four bears on a run just a little ways up north in a helicopter. So there's lots of bears in the area and they're coming out and being hungry.
Do they have anybody armed up there?
Yeah, the pipeline security is armed. And if we're out on a job and we know there's a bear in the area, they'll come out and provide bear watch for us. So there was a guy that just about got killed last year though, because he got, after work, he would go out at pump station 5 and run up and down the runway, just go running, jogging. And the security up here is really good about checking in on you. You know, whenever you go do anything, they check and they'll give you time. If they don't see you in a certain amount of time, they'll call and check on you. And they noticed that he wasn't back relatively soon, you know, compared to his normal routine. So they went out looking for him and found him half eaten by a bear out along the runway.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so it happens. But luckily for me, you know, as an operator, I don't really have to get out of the cab that much. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, I think you've gotten a couple new toys since the last episode. And I know, yep, I've gotten a couple new toys that we've talked about, but we haven't talked about together on here. So, what do we want to talk about first?
I want to hear about your 375. That thing's sweet.
Okay, 375. So, I know I've talked about it on here a little bit. Ruger. So, I got the first generation of the Ruger Hawkeye Alaskan guide for model. So it doesn't have the porting, doesn't have the muzzle brake. It doesn't have the threaded muzzle for any of that. And it doesn't have the spacers in the stock. It has just a standard one piece gray. I think they call it the pepper laminate.
Yeah. And you know, that's kind of a good thing, you know, without the muzzle brake or anything, that would actually make a really good African rifle too, if you ever wanted to take it over there for that.
Yeah, I'm not really, I would never use a muzzle brake on a rifle like that anyway. The only rifle I've ever owned where I thought, man, this would be a good idea to put a muzzle brake on this rifle was a Ruger Canoe Paddle 338. And that rifle was just brutal to shoot. I ended up putting it in a different stock and it fixed it. You know, those stocks are just horrible. But, you know, muzzle brake just makes it louder. And that 375 really surprisingly shoots way gentler than I thought it would. That rifle is easy to shoot.
Yeah, so, 375 Ruger is not that bad. The recoil is about like a 375 H&H, honestly.
Yeah, it's a little the cartridge itself is a little stiffer than a 375 H&H. But yeah, so I got the 20-inch barrel on that one. So originally, I mean, I've been wanting a 375 Ruger for a while, and I walked into Sportsman's Warehouse up here in Fairbanks a while back, and there's not a gun on the shelf except for a left-handed Ruger. And I picked it up, and it was the Hawkeye African model and 375 Ruger. I'm like, oh, I've been wanting to try one of these out. And it's got the 24-inch barrel and the walnut stock on it. I looked at the price tag, and it was like $12.89 or something like that. So I got home, and I was like, out of curiosity, I looked on GunBroker to see what those rifles are running for. And GunBroker, I was kind of hemming and hawing about it. And I came across the one that I bought there early. It was an old stock rifle, new in the box, had a couple handling marks. And I think I picked it up for like $819. I got a really good deal on that rifle.
And it's that is a good deal.
It's left-handed. And I've never actually owned a left-handed rifle before. I shoot left-handed. I've always shot left-handed, but I've always just worked a bolt. You know, I usually just hold the rifle up by the pistol grip with my left hand, kind of tilt my head back and run the bolt with my right hand and bring my eye back down to the scope or irons or whatever. So I've never really owned a left-handed rifle, and I like the left-handed rifle now that I've used it. And I got to say, the best thing about the left-handed rifle is watching right-handed shooters, because everybody wants to shoot your new rifle, you know. Trying to watch right-handed shooters work the bolt on a left-handed rifle is hilarious. So
there's and you've been loading ammo for it.
Yep, I've been loading ammo for it. I topped that rifle off. I put a Vortex PST Viper 1-6x24 on there, just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that scope. And we'll talk about that more in an upcoming episode. I got to do a review on that Skinner scope I have too.
You like it so far?
The Skinner scope, I'm really impressed with for the money. Yeah, that's a really nice scope for the dollars, and we can talk about that a little bit.
A Night Force, it's not, but what it is for the price.
Yeah, for a $250, $300 scope, it's a really nice scope. I've had it on a couple of rifles now, testing it out. Whenever I get home again, I'm going to throw it on my 458 and do some recoil endurance testing on it. But after playing with it, I have no doubt that it's going to pass the recoil test without a problem. That's a really well-made little scope.
Well, answer me this. How big is it as far as... I mean, it's a big full size rifle pattern scope, right?
So yes, it's a 1-6x24. So here's what's funny: it's actually the same configuration as my PST that I have on my 375.
Okay.
They're both 1-6x24s. They're both set up with finger click. They're capped, but they both are set up with finger click turrets that are half MOA adjusted, which is a little coarse, but for a big bore hunting rifle like that, half MOA is fine. They're both set up very similar with a lit reticle with a click adjuster on the side for the reticle to turn it on. The Skinner optics is 15 ounces and the Vortex is 22 ounces.
Okay.
So it's for what it is, it's actually a pretty, and you've seen pictures of it actually. I posted a picture of it today on the page, mounted on my little Zestavis.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, I mean, it's not a giant scope, but it's still a full size scope. It's got a 30mm tube on it. It's not a small scope by any means, but it's not.
Hey, you know, my BFR stand iron sights, because Furman Garza is building me the brass front sight for it.
Right.
But I've ordered a 5.5-inch 500 JRH, and mm-hmm. that one I'm going to put a scope on.
Yeah. I actually have a brass front sight from Andy with Skinner sights from my 4570. I need to put on when I get home, because I got his black gold express rear sight for it. And I thought the brass bear buster sight would look pretty good on there too. So I have one of those on order from him, and I'll put that on when I get home.
Furman builds a really nice sight.
Yeah. I looked at some of his sights. When I had that Colt single action that I was trying to find sights for before I sold it, I talked to him pretty heavily about a set of sights for that. And I ended up finding a set of original micro sights that were period correct. I put on it instead, but he makes, Furman makes some really nice sights. So anyway, and back
really
to
the, good for the money.
Yeah. It's not it's really terribly expensive. Anyway, back to the 375 Ruger. I did work up some loads for it, and rifle is surprisingly accurate. I was really surprised how accurate that rifle was for out of the box. I haven't bedded it I haven't lapped bore or anything like that. And I was shooting, you know, 0.6 MOA at 100 yards just off of I've just got a sandbag on a 55-gallon drum out in front of my house and a pallet winged out down the tree line 100 yards. So not a super good rest. And I was shooting, you know, well under MOA with it.
Well, I mean, what more would you want out of a big bore? It's pretty good accuracy.
Whenever I get, yeah, so I'm shooting a 250 grain. I wanted to go heavier, but with everything the way it is right now, I just took the bullets I could get. So I'm shooting 250 grain Barnes TS or the TTSX triple shock tipped.
Yeah.
And I'm pushing
that bullet.
Yeah, it's a good bullet. They expand. I shot some for expansion testing and they open up really nicely in uniform. You know, it's a good bullet. I just don't generally buy Barnes because they're so damned expensive. When, you know, especially with as much shooting as I do, I know I'm going to shoot those bullets up just playing around. Because whenever I get home, I plan on trying to stretch that rifle out to 600-700 yards and kind of play around with that a little bit.
Oh, but Daniel, it's a waste of time to shoot a rifle at 600 or 700 yards.
And according to Jeff Cooper, it is. Let's not go down that road.
Here we go. Started shit.
Yeah, don't. Let's not go down that road today. This is supposed to be a happy episode.
Hey, Daniel. Here we do most of our shooting with these. This is the 45 automatic.
So anyway.
At least you get the reference.
No, I do. So anyway, that the 375 Ruger, 250 grain, it's launching with my hand loads. I'm getting 2830 foot per second with that 250 grain out of the 20-inch barrel.
Wow.
Out of a 20-inch barrel. Smoking. So it is. Yeah. It's a little hotter than a 375 H&H. Now, hand loading for a 375 H&H, I think you can probably get pretty close to that. But the 375 Ruger is supposedly supposed to do the same thing as the H&H, but with the shorter barrel, but it does have a little bit higher case capacity with that fatter case.
Well, the 375 Ruger is a bit more size efficient, I think, than the 375 H&H.
It is, but it sits in the same, it sits in a standard length action, same as a 338 Win Mag or a 30-06. Right. And yeah,
well, and you're getting the same or better ballistics with a cartridge that's actually quite a bit physically shorter.
Yes. See, yeah, when the Hornady's thing with the 375 Ruger was to be able to equal the 375 H&H ballistic that out of a normal 375 H&H rifle, they normally have 24-inch barrels, those are safari rifles, and they wanted to be able to equal or exceed those ballistics from a 20-inch barrel, which is what mine has.
And now, let me ask you this. So, with the 375 Ruger, you know how, like, with a 375 H&H, a 404 Jeffrey, 416 Rigby, whatever, all the guys that get the old K98 or Mauser pattern rifles, mm-hmm. you know, after they put their box on it, there is a lot of work that you have to do for those cartridges to fit in those rifles. Yeah, so couldn't you just convert those rifles to 375 Ruger?
Yeah, anything that you can convert to a anything that you can convert to a standard Magnum rifle, you can convert to a 375 Ruger. So like 1903 Springfields, you could convert that to 375 Ruger. And here's where the 375 Ruger comes in, is it will fit in a standard 30-06 length box. So we're not trying to make the box longer. We're not trying to shave metal out of the back of the receiver or the front of the receiver to get longer cartridges in there. If we wanted to build a custom rifle on an old military action, you can just, or even a commercial action, you don't have to find a Magnum length action. You can find a standard 30-06 length action, open up the bolt head and away you go. But it uses a standard Magnum bolt head, the same as your 338 7mm Remington, 300 Win Mag, whatever. It's still a standard bolt head.
So what you're saying basically is your average Joe could go out and get a good deal on like a pre-owned Remington 700 or a Model 70 mm-hmm. or anything, and like 30-06, 7mm Magnum, whatever, and take it, have it rebarreled, and have a 375 Ruger.
Right, exactly. I could rebarrel your Savage 338 to 375 Ruger in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I've actually been bidding on a barrel for it in 416 Ruger.
Yep. Man, I wanted to get the 416 Ruger when I bought this one, and I like the 375, and it's... And it, it's pretty flat shooting, really. With 100 yard zero with that 250 grain, I ran just some rough ballistics apps with the Hornady ballistic calculators.
Right.
And I'm like right at 11 MOA a drop at 600 yards, which really isn't bad for that big of a bullet.
That's not bad at all.
So now that I've played with a left-handed rifle, I'm really heavily considering selling my 458 and building a left-handed 458, like twin brother to this 375.
Oh, go all the way. Do a left-handed 470 capstick. Go all the way.
And maybe. I'm still, man, in the back of my head, I've still got that Marlin GBL 4570 I picked up last year. And about once a week, I start researching again about sending it off and having it converted to 50 Alaskan. I just haven't.
Well, you go ahead and just have it converted to 50 Alaskan already.
I need to. I've been talking about that for going on 6 months now.
Well, think about it. You already have another 4570. What's it matter?
Two other 4570s.
Okay, so what's it matter if you have 150 Alaskan? You still have two 4570s.
Yeah, I know. So the issue is going about how I want to do it. Because on the 50 Alaskan conversions, there's some guys say you're just fine reboring the barrel and working on the feeding issues and getting it to work. And then there's other people saying you need to change the threads in the receiver and you need to put a new barrel on it. And it has to be a certain tensile strength because the factory barrels aren't strong enough. Because you get so thin back in the threads when you go to a 50 caliber. So I'm really just hemming and hawing over how I want to do the conversion. Do I want to go all the way, have the action worked over, put a new barrel on, or just want to, you know, risk a reborn and hope for the best?
I would box it up, send it to SSK Industries, and tell them to let you know how much you owe them and when it's done and ship it back.
$900.
Is that what they quoted you?
$900. If I go the reborn route, I can have it done for about $250.
Yeah, but if you have it done at SSK for $900, it's going to last a lifetime.
True. But supposedly, so when Wild West Guns was doing their conversions back in the day before they came up with their own cartridge, they were just doing rebores. They were using factory barrels, and everybody says those guns have held up fine. So,
well, it's not a super high pressure cartridge.
No, it's not. It's still just a lever gun cartridge. So I'm just going back and forth. Probably before the end of the year, I am going to send that rifle off somewhere and have it done, though.
Right.
Or I might buy a second.
There's been a Blue Million 348 reboard. So, I mean.
So I actually got offered, a guy I work with offered to trade me a Browning 71 in 348 today. Oof. And I'm actually considering picking it up. He made a pretty good offer on it. And doing a 50 Alaskan conversion on that instead. So I'm thinking about that as well.
Remind me, Browning model 71.
So it's the modernized Browning 86. It was the only rifle they ever chambered the 348 Winchester in.
Right. That had that. Didn't those have the optional rear sight that would fold out of the way when you operated the action and stuff?
Yeah, I think there were some different things you could do with that, different receiver sights and then like ladder sights.
That was a neat rifle.
Yeah, they're pretty neat rifles, high grade rifles, high dollar.
Really
rifles.
Well built. Yeah, I remember the actions on those felt really nice.
Yeah, so the Browning and Winchester 71s are extremely popular for doing 50 Alaskan conversions on. So if I end up picking that rifle up, he offered to trade me a Nylon 66. And that 458 for it, which would really be a pretty decent trade. So I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. So I want to complain about Rugers for a little while.
Don't you? You always want to complain about Ruger.
I just got to say, luck. After buying a BFR, I don't think I will ever buy another new production single action Ruger revolver.
Man, I'm going to tell you something, and people that listen to this podcast and know what I'm talking about are going to laugh. But my wife got me sucked into TikTok. Of all things that they're, you know, wasting time, and I'm sure you know what it is. There is actually a guy that works for BFR who does TikTok videos where he shows how they, like him doing all the custom fine fitting and you know, the polishing and man, he does some nice work. And every time I see those videos, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go buy a BFR. And I go to the custom shop and I see a 12-month wait. And I'm like, I don't think I'm buying a BFR today.
Yeah, mine was just sitting on the shelf and I just went ahead and bought it while it was sitting there.
And if I saw one sitting on the shelf and the price was right and I had the cash in my pocket, I'd buy one. I'm really curious to try them out.
They ain't cheap. They ain't cheap. I paid $12.89 for mine.
Still less than a Freedom Arms.
Yeah, and coming from a reliable source, I'm told that unlike a Freedom Arms, they will operate when they're dirty. They're a much better choice for a field gun.
So the early Freedom Arms were so tight. And this is an issue. I remember this being an issue when I was a kid, because my dad was a Freedom Arms guy. And here's what's funny about my dad. My dad either liked really top dollar, nicest guns you could get, or he had complete beater thrown behind the seat of the truck, dragged down the road and forget about in the bottom of the boat rifle. There was no in between. He didn't have any mediocre rifles. He had complete junkers or he had top knots. And he had several Freedom Arms revolvers when I was a kid, all in 454 from what I remember. And I remember him complaining, and I remember seeing the early ones, and they'd get a little bit of river silt in the action, and they'd just bind up tight, and they wouldn't work. And supposedly, in the newer Freedom Arms, they've loosened up the tolerances a little bit, so they will work when they get semi-dirty. But I would still be hesitant to, like, you know, four-wheel with one all day out in the open and get it, you know, if you're following somebody else on a four-wheeler and you got that Freedom Arms on your chest where it can get full of dust, I'd still be pretty hesitant and worried that it wouldn't work.
Right. And, you know, I was also told from a reliable source, I don't start throwing names unless I know it's okay to, but the person I was talking to was telling me that the barrels on BFRs are just a much higher quality barrel than on the Rugers, which I guess for the price difference, that would make sense.
Yeah, I don't.
They're pretty much match grade, I guess.
I don't know anything about the BFR barrels. I know Ruger makes all their. I believe Ruger makes all their barrels in house, with their hammer forged barrels. And I've had some really accurate Ruger revolvers. I'm not the one that's had bad luck with Rugers. I've never had a Ruger gun I didn't like. But some of my friends seem to have some trouble with them.
Maybe I just have higher standards than you do, Daniel.
Maybe you just have higher standards. But
you have to understand that I'm an engine builder. I build things to very tight and very specific tolerances. When you put a barrel in and the barrel's crooked, I'm not going to be very happy with it.
I will admit that seeing that crooked barrel on your 44 mag you bought was disappointing to me. That's the only one I've ever seen like that.
You mean both of them? Both of the 45 Colts?
I don't know how you manage to do that, because I couldn't even tell you how many Ruger revolvers I've owned, singles and double actions, and I've only ever had one that was less than perfect, and it was a single six 32 H&R mag, and I bought it used, and it was out of time, and I sent it to Ruger asking to retime it, and they sent me. It didn't even look like the same gun. They re-blued it. They put new grips on it, and that gun was perfect after that.
Wow.
So, I don't know. You've had some bad luck with the Rugers, but I will admit the BFRs, from the ones I've never shot one, never owned one, but I've handled them. I know my dad had a BFR, and I believe 480 Ruger when they first came out, and they are some nice guns.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about mine. My holster should be here pretty soon. I got in the waistband straps and everything.
Yeah, I know you did. I'm surprised you haven't ordered a shootist with inside the waistband straps yet.
Can you do that?
He'll do anything. I mean, you can build whatever you want. He built me a shoulder rig to work with his Tribute holster, so that way I can still wear the holster on the belt. And then use it on a shoulder rig if I want.
You remind me what your 1911. So I've had a couple questions lately. A few people have messaged me and asked me why I have my 1911 put together the way it is. I have a whole bag of Wilson parts I was eventually going to put in it. New hammer, safety, all the crap you do, sights.
I need to put a new recoil spring in mine. Mine's getting to the point where you notice ejected cases have a big dent in the side of them from flying up and hitting the ejection port too hard. So mine's due for a new recoil spring, but I couldn't tell you how many rounds I put through that gun. Probably close to 10,000.
Yeah, I'm getting up to a little over 2,500. But so a few people have asked me, you know, why I have like the Stags and a GI style 1911.
Why wouldn't you put Stags on there?
Okay, so it's actually a movie gun, a movie I've liked since I was a kid. A movie. And it's a sort of obscure.
You tell me the movie for yours, and I'll tell you the TV show that inspired me to put Stags on mine.
Okay, so there was a movie with Nick Nolte called Extreme Prejudice.
I've heard of it. I've never watched it.
Okay, so it's your typical Hollywood movie. A typical cop takes a Western Border Patrol style police officer, you know, a Texican police officer. Pretty much, you know, kills everybody with machine guns and army tanks with a Commander 1911 shooting hardball. You know, the usual. Mm-hmm. But I'll have to send you some clips. They had some good gunfights in it, and I enjoyed it because it was just a plain old GI Commander with Stags on it. And, like, the noise that the magazines make going in and out. He's got standard, you know, Colt GI magazines. It sounds like he's shoving, like, paper mache up in the magwell every time he changes the magazine, you know?
So
it was just a really good movie, and I thought it was just the coolest thing. But so that's why I have that. That's why I have Stags on a GI style 1911. It's tipping my hat to Extreme Prejudice.
So for one, I just think the Stags look sexy on that two-tone 1911 I have. I've got the Ruger lightweight Commander.
And can we mention that it's also old school stippling? It actually does improve your grip.
Yeah, it does. And Stags for one, I don't care what you put them on. For the most part, Stags look sexy. I don't care if they're on a double action revolver, single action revolver, 1911. They look good.
I wish you could put them on a Glock.
I mean, you probably could. So, but
let's just have David Alsop build a whole Glock frame out of Stag.
So the I've liked Stag for a long time, and I've always wanted a set of Stag. And I always wanted Stag on a 1911. And the reason I've always wanted Stag on a 1911 is because of Walt Longmire. And they had that and he had a GI. Yeah. He had a GI 1911, 5-inch full size GI 1911 with Stags on it.
Right.
And, so that was partially what inspired me to put Stags on mine, but it did have to do a lot with just the fact that I think they looked nice on there. And I watched David's Facebook page probably for 6 months watching until I saw the set that I knew I had to have. You know, I like the almost no bark, very dark chocolate, a lot of white on them, you know, with deep chocolate grooves on them. I waited probably for 6 months until he posted that setup and bought them.
Yeah, his stocks are hard to beat.
Yeah, I heard. I guess he was diagnosed with lung cancer last year, and it sounds like he's doing a lot better lately.
I think he beat it.
Yeah, it sounds like he's gonna make a recovery from that. So that's good. I hate to lose that guy right now. He does make some fantastic grips.
Yeah.
What did you ever do with those ones you bought for your K frame?
I have them on another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got them on my old hand ejector 3220.
Mm-hmm. I've been in the market for another little snub nose 357, and I'm not sure which route I'm going to go yet. But I'm probably going to get a Ruger SP-101.
Yeah. Can't blame you there. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I finally shot the Taurus 85 to death.
Finally broken, huh?
It's finally, and I've taken it apart and cleaned it, but every once in a while you'll go to pull the trigger or cock it back and the cylinder won't rotate.
Sounds like the hands wore out.
I couldn't tell you how many rounds that gun's had through it. I've got buckets of MP38 special brass that I've loaded, bought ammo for. I mean, I've had that gun for five years now.
Wow.
And, you know, and Amanda carried it for a long time. And then, and I shoot it, you know, anytime I'm working up loads for anything, and she shoots it a lot and I shot it a lot. And it finally has gotten to the point where it's just not dependable
anymore. What's she going to carry now?
Right now, she's got my 586.
Oh, okay.
She's got my 4-inch 586. But I'm thinking about buying her that NFP 101 357 or an LCR in 357. I haven't decided which route to go yet. But that way she can still carry and practice with the 38 special. But then if we go out berry picking or something, she can load it up with some of my 357, you know, 200 grain bear busters and, you know, put anything down she needs to.
Why do you get a 3-inch LCR?
She prefers a shorter barrel. She likes the 2-inch. She likes okay. A snubby. And I'll tell you this, that woman can shoot a snubby. She can shoot a snubby better than anybody I've ever seen. I'm a good shot, and she'll outshoot me with a snubby. She shoots a snubby better than she shoots a long barrel.
Probably your eyesight. Some people like a shorter sight radius.
Yeah. She can shoot a snubby really well. And it's funny, like, we'll go to the range and I'll set up some clay birds out, you know, 15, 20 yards or something. I'll hand it because I think you can break those to go bang, 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 bang. And look at me like, this is boring. But, like, you know, I've been shooting for 20 years and I can't hit clay birds at 25 yards with a snubby sometimes. So,
yeah, I'm really excited to finally get shoot the Contender because its trigger is just stupidly exquisite.
Contenders have the best triggers out of anything. You know, my first game animal ever that I ever killed when I was 5, I killed with a Contender in 22 Hornet.
Nice.
Yep. So,
but the BFR is going to pretty much be my workhorse. I got the Furman's sending me I still got to measure my front sight height to get him so he can do the final height on it. Right. But, you know, he asked you, like, what prescription glasses you wear, what bullets you're shooting, mm-hmm. all that. So he's very specific, but I ordered it with the optional serrations on the base and the back of the sight, you know, complete matte dressed brass. Right. And I got the Coca-Cola wood stocks coming from Car Arms. They sell them, you know, out of their store.
Right.
And then because I was going to carry it in the waistband when I hunt. You really need to conceal up here because all the weird soy boy hikers and shit all call the cops and they see you walking around with a handgun. They get weird.
It's funny because around the town I live in, I open carry a lot. Everybody, it's not uncommon to see people open carrying pistols up here in Alaska. It's pretty common. And everybody knows I'm a gun guy. I live in a small town. You know, everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows everybody by name. And it's funny. Because I'll carry my 1911 to church sometimes and, you know, have it open. And when I do, it's funny. There'll almost always be somebody who'll come over like, sir, you know your gun's cocked, right? I was like, yeah, it's supposed to be. So, but, yeah, I guess I'm just lucky where I'm at because I could probably walk into Walmart with a 45-70 strapped across my back and nobody would say a damn thing.
Now, do they usually give you flack about handguns?
No. As a matter of fact, Fred Meyers and Walmart and Fairbanks both have corporate policies to no firearms, and they don't enforce them. You cannot walk into a store up here without seeing somebody with a gun. If you're putting gas in your truck at the gas station, somebody will have a gun. You're getting groceries at the small at the grocery store, IGA. There'll be somebody in there with a gun. You go to Walmart, there'll be somebody in there with a gun. It's just everybody has a gun up here. And that's just the ones that people are open carrying. You know, everybody concealed carries too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but that's the kind of thing I like about sourdough pancakes. You can wear them either way, outside or inside.
Now with my shoulder rig, I'll be able to wear them under my shoulder or on my chest too. Because I can get the chesty puller rig. So you can wear it inside, outside, left, right, upside down, shoulder rig, chest rig. It's a very versatile holster.
Yeah, it is.
I've got I couldn't even tell you how many I have anymore. I've got one for every gun I own. I mean, I have some for guns I don't own.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
But I'm always kind of watching these Gear to Go page. If I see something left-handed that's for a gun I like, I'll buy it. Because the chances are I'm going to buy one of those guns someday and I'll need the holster for it. You know, and when I see them on his Gear to Go page and they're, you know, 40% of what they would be to order it custom.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I bought a few holsters that way. He sent me one here a while back. He said, I bought that 586. And he's like, oh, I got a holster for you. I'll just send it to you. And, you know, and I'm pretty good friends with Rob. So it was, you know, nice of him. He shows up and he sent me a shark skin holster for my 586. Like, ooh, that's an expensive gift. I'm not sure if you've priced out the full shark skin holsters, but they're not
very expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap. So he said he was sending me one. He's like, I've got a holster that's got some wrinkles and I think you'll like it. I thought maybe it was one that had a brand or something on it, you know, or got kind of messed up during manufacturing, and it shows up and it was shark skin, and I was like, oh, that is wrinkly.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna get me another, because I have the Shootist for my 1911, but I think I'm going to get me a CUDA and monitor lizard.
I've got the DEFCON 3 and just black beef, and that is definitely my favorite holster for 1911 out of anything I've ever used. So and I like the DEFCON 3 because it has a little bit of the steel band he adds into it, so it adds a little bit of extra retention. Right. And it helps keep the holster open, you know, because I shoot at the range a lot. And that's one thing I don't like about the sourdough pancakes, is when you're shooting at the range, they don't stay open. You kind of got to, you know, poke around at them with the muzzle to get it started and get the gun back down in there. And with that steel band on the DEFCON 3, they don't do that. You can just put the gun right in. Don't have to fight the holster right at all. But the sourdoughs are an excellent field holster. They keep the gun tight up on your side, you know.
Yeah, I don't like them all flopping around, hanging down. You know, John Wayne, he used to wear his guns like that. I'm just not a fan.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think, Nick. Is there any other new toys you've gotten? You got your BFR, and we talked about that a little bit. We didn't talk.
I'm looking to see if we got that. I'm still waiting on my 500 GRH to come in.
I bought a new scope this week. My wife bought me a Vortex scope for our anniversary. Our anniversary is the 15th of this month, and she got me a new rifle scope for my AR-15. So I'm waiting for that to come in. I bought an AR-15. Because Uncle Joe.
Speaking of anniversaries, I've started kind of dating around some. And then I'm kind of instantly reminded why I'm single.
Girls, right? Girls, or are you dating guys now?
They're just too expensive. The amount of money I've spent in food in the past 2 weeks and BS like that, I could just buy another gun. Hey, so I wonder how long before ammo prices get back to somewhat normal and supply and demand get back to somewhat normal.
So that is actually a good question. And before we started the episode, I posted on Facebook and asked if anybody.
Yeah, Jeb Hardy said that.
Yep. Jeb Hardy asked about that. He had some choice words mixed in. I'm trying to find it again. Right here. So Jeb Hardy asked, how is it to be a shooter and reloader during this current shit show with no ammo or primers? How is it better to be prepared for this kind of stuff to avoid the carpetbagger's overpriced shit? Is the cost of things now going to be the new normal? How to keep your skills sharp on limited ammunition? Oh, and why the bleep can't I find an 1858 Remington pistol?
I can answer the last one.
Okay, let's go with that one first.
All those guns are pretty much all made in Italy. And Italy was hit really hard by COVID. And most of the manufacturing over there building those guns, they also build center fire guns. So with all their lockdowns and the factories being locked down for a long time, when they opened them back up, they're of course going to build the guns that sell the most. And the guns that sell the most that they're building are your 73 single action army copies and center fire cartridges.
And yeah, old Sharps rifles and that kind of stuff. They're not.
I've wanted to buy a couple of nickel plated, gold plated cylinder 51 Navies to carry around at Publix grocery store lately, but I have not been able to get them.
Yeah.
So I can totally sympathize with that.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any company in the United States right now that's making the cap and balls copies.
Now Colt used to do a run of 51s and 60 armies.
That's not a production pistol. That's a limited.
No, they would make special. What 500 like, of them at a
time? If that.
Tell you what, I wouldn't mind having one though. Okay. I mean, if you like 51 navies as much as me, as far as the prices being the new normal, I think they'll come down. I don't think they'll ever go down to what they were. Every time we have something like this, they drop down and they stay just a little higher than they
were. The last time that we had an event to this scale that I remember would have been 2008 and 2012 when Obama got in. And I remember 2007, I was paying $9 a brick for 22 ammo.
Right.
And in 2013, when we started to see ammo on the shelves again, and during that, you know, during the Obama years, that you couldn't pick 22 ammo up. It was 60, 70, 80 bucks a brick, just like it is right now.
I remember that.
Just like it is right now. And when things finally leveled out and you could find ammo again, you could buy ammo online or wherever else, it settled in for the price of between 20 and 25 bucks a brick, you know, for the plinking ammo. So do I think things will drop down in price? Yeah, we're not going to be paying 60 bucks a box for 9mm for forever. You know, people that pay that are stupid. They're going to run out of money at some point, you know, or credit card, whatever it is. It's however they're paying for this stuff because, I mean, I have a good job. I have relatively low amount of bills, and I'm not paying 60 bucks a box for 9mm. Luckily, I've got 100 pounds of powder and quite a good stash of primers and bullets and stuff, and I've been able to keep shooting on my back stash. But I don't think we're going to see $12 a box 9mm ammo again. I think we'll probably settle into that $18, $20 box for 9mm. Probably, I'm going to say 30 to mid 30s for 22 ammo. You know, 5.56 is probably going to be in that 20, you know, or probably settle down to around. I haven't even looked at 5.56 ammo in a while. It was about $8 a box before. I bet you we see around $15-16 a box for 5.56. Cartridges that are generally used more for hunting, 30-06, 308, we'll probably see a couple dollar increase on that. It probably won't double, but I don't think we're gonna ever see prices back to where they were because the manufacturers now know, they'll pay this price for it. So why not, you know, capitalize on that a little bit.
It could go a different direction though, because you know they've opened up a lot of manufacturing to try and meet the demand. So
if here's the thing though. If Biden's in for 4 years, everybody's gonna continue to buy at the rate they are right now. I tell you, if I see powders or primer right now that are somewhat normal priced, I buy them. I don't need them. I've got more powder and primer than I know what to do with. So, but you buy when the prices are good. You stock up. And it's not very often, but like I picked up 4,000 primers the other day because they were semi-normal prices. You know?
Right.
So, and yeah, I mean, I wouldn't consider what I do panic buying. I'm still doing my normal buying. That's how I always buy stuff. When I see a good deal, I buy it. Right now, normal prices is a good deal. But if we have Biden in for another 4 years, I don't see the rate of purchase going down. If he's in for 8 years, which is a good possibility he will, since he got in the first time, if he's in for 8 years, or even worse, you know, Harris gets in, I could see the prices continue, you know, staying the same, if not going up for at least the next several years.
Mm.
So it sucks to be a shooter, you know, right now, but there are still ways to keep shooting. You know, a lot of my powder and primers I have right now, I've got about 100 pounds of rifle powder. I've probably bought about 10 pounds of that at the store. You know, I'm watching for deals on yard sales. I'm watching for deals on Craigslist. I'm watching for anytime I go to an auction or the pallet of random reloading stuff, I'll buy it. Sometimes I'll even overpay for it, and then I'll sell the stuff I don't want, so I get the other stuff, you know, basically for free.
Right.
There are ways to keep getting reloading components, and there's still, you know, the little old lady that has all of her old husband's reloading stuff and puts it on Craigslist for $20, but she doesn't know what it is. You still do find deals like that. And it's just, you know, you have to be more diligent because there's other people looking for those kind of deals too. So you just gotta, you know, keep your eyes open. There's still deals to be had. And I think things are going to start settling out a little bit. You know, Biden's talking about his executive orders with gun control. So far, they've all been stupid stuff anyway. They're just thrown out there to feed the sheep, you know.
Right.
But so I think things will – I don't know that they're going to go back to normal, though. But I do think, like, I saw a picture today. Somebody went to Sportsman's Warehouse in Fairbanks, and they had full stock 9mm, 40, and 45. It'll probably be gone by the end of the week, but they had it. You can get ammo, you know, and it is getting better. I don't think it'll go back to normal, though.
Right.
So, I mean, what else did Jim? So, being a shooter and reloader in these times, like I said, for me, I've got a pretty good stash of stuff. It hasn't really affected me as much as probably a lot of other people. But I also remember in 2008 when Obama got elected and you couldn't find 22 ammo. And I was, how old was I in 2008? I would have been 15? Yeah, 15. I wasn't old enough to have stocked up that time. You know, I didn't have the option. So I fought through it and I learned my lesson. If I want to shoot, I better have some crap on hand the next time this goes down. You know, and right. we all saw this coming for months ahead, you know. The first time Trump did something, I told everybody I know that when Trump banned bump stocks, he was going to lose the next election because he lost a lot of his voters over that. You know, technically, as of right now, Trump has done more anti-gun stuff than Biden. And I was a Trump supporter, so don't get me wrong. Don't think I'm going the wrong way with that. But if we're honest, you know. So
yeah.
I don't really know what to say about it. But anyway, Nick, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay. But yeah, going back to the AR-15, I did buy an AR-15 here recently. One, because it was a good deal. Two, because it's the kind of AR-15 I like, because I'm not really into the combat, you know, little short tactical. This is a A1 style heavy duty 24-inch heavy barrel. I mean, it's a varmint rifle, you know, it's just a semi-auto varmint rifle. And it was a good deal. But third reason I bought it, just because Uncle Joe says no, and I'm a do what I want kind of a guy. So I went and bought an AR-15.
Well, there you go.
So all right, Nick. Well, I think we'll go ahead and get this one wrapped up. Everybody, I do appreciate everybody taking the time to log into our show. Hopefully now that I've got a computer and we can start getting episodes that are higher quality out and more frequent, it'll be a lot easier to record now that I can bring a computer up to the slope with me. So I appreciate everybody sticking with us this far, and we will see everybody next time.
I'll take it easy.